You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Yeah, look, this evening, down at the old Footscray Hotel, where the carpets are so threadbare they can't even be beer-soaked, I'll be doing a presentation on the industrial workers of the world. Seems that there's a little bit of interest in this presentation, and there should be, because this is an extraordinary group which was around in the first 20 years of the 20th century, the last century. So it's 6:30pm for a 7pm start. 6:30pm for a 7pm start. You are allowed to bring food to the pub because they don't make any. They do have chips in bags. They don't have coffee, but they do have alcohol. So it's a real pub, okay? So bring food, come along, be part of the presentation. I think the next thing we've got in place is the 30th of July, which is the dinner down at La Porchetta in Frankston. But if you've got nothing to do, you can always join us on the steps of the Victorian Parliament House on the public housing everybody's business vigils, which go from midday to 1pm every Thursday. It is nice to see people there in winter because I'm sick of fair weather friends. Anybody can come out in spring and hold a banner. It's a little bit different in winter. So hopefully we'll see. Ah, yes, the Sydney people have finally got it right. Their sacred cows have wandered in and shook their heads and they've wandered out. We're about to blast off into the ether to speak to the people of the continent of Australasia. Here we go. Well, well, well. It's the Anarchist World this week on your local community radio station, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program is coming to you from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. My name is Joseph Toscano, and if during the course of the program nature calls, Asia knocks on the door, relax. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au, Anarchist World This Week. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of podcasts. You could, what do they say, binge for free on Anarchist World This Week podcast. See if we can radicalise you. Now, you know, life's a bit interesting. Look, I'll give you a definition of anarchism. Well, my definition. Anarchos without rulers. That's what the word anarchism comes from. The Greek anarchos without rulers. So we go down to basic. What causes most of the problems we're faced with as individuals and communities? Inequalities in power and wealth. What gives rulers the ability to determine the lives of billions of people? Inequalities in power and wealth. So the anarchist struggle, the struggle to devolve power, possible through direct democratic means, and the struggle to hold wealth in common and use it for the common good. Nothing radical about that. Just simple concepts, which people in various guises, various nationalities, various races, various, you could name it, have been attempting to reach for thousands of years. So there's nothing new under the sun, and there is nothing new as far as human, political, philosophical ideologies are concerned. Now, it's my opinion, it's only my opinion for what it's worth, that if you have one original thought in your lifetime, you've made a contribution to the world. One original thought. I'm still waiting for mine. But I had a person called Don ring me up last week. Yeah, I do get calls, and you can leave messages on 0439 395 489. And he was speaking to me about the era of Hague. And I thought, what's this nut on about? What's he talking about? But I do listen. And explain that we have entered the era of Hague, H.A.I.G. And the thing is, I think Don's had an original thought. Now, don't disappoint me and tell me you've heard this before, because maybe he stole it off somebody, or maybe B40 heard it somewhere, but he claims it's his original fort. So what's this era of H.A.I.G. that I'm boring you with today, at the end of the first quarter of the 21st century? See, political and cultural action is basically a simple affair. Although we're told it's complex, it's relatively simple. And if you can encapsulate the essence of a period in a few words, you can actually open up discussion, open people's eyes, and possibly even help to explain what's happening in the world today. So what's Hague, H.A.I.G. And once again, I said this is Don's original idea, well, he claims it is. H, hypocrisy. A, arrogance. I, ignorance. G, greed. The era of Hague, the era of hypocrisy, greed. Think about it. Arrogance, ignorance. I think these four letters do a great deal to explain the behaviour we see around the world. But it's not just a matter of putting labels on behaviour like hypocrisy, you know, or ignorance, or greed, or whatever, or arrogance. It's about thinking why these four words are so relevant at the end of the first quarter of the 21st century. And to a significant degree, they're relevant, not just because they explain what's happening around us, but they actually highlight what happens when we see the concentration of power and wealth in fewer and fewer hands. And if there's one thing the first quarter of the 21st century has done, is actually increase the power wielded by a minuscule minority and increase the amount of wealth which has been accumulated by a shrinking number of people. For example, you know, 40% of Australians own 1% of the wealth, and 1% of Australians own almost 40% of the wealth. I mean, that's the reality. So these words haven't sprung out of it anywhere, but they are the direct result of the growing inequalities which we see not just in Australia but around the world. So it is a simple way of looking at and trying to understand what's happening around us. Hypocrisy, arrogance, ignorance, greed. So let's look at the four words. I mean, the four words. The era of Hague. Hypocrisy. There is nothing more hypocritical than the world's response to the ongoing carnage in Gaza. Ho-hum. Another 100 Palestinians, mainly women and children, murdered by the Israeli Defence Forces today. Ho-hum. what we're seeing in Gaza epitomises the hypocrisy around us, which is displayed not just by rulers, but many of the people around us. It's just extraordinary. At the end of the first quarter of the 21st century, we are seeing the destruction and carnage mainly amongst people who've got nothing to do with what happened in October 2023 in Gaza, and how the world shrugs its shoulders, moves on. And the way our political leaders look at these issues and the type of pressure which is placed on the Israeli authorities is just extraordinary. The lack of pressure. Ho-hum. 50 today, 100 tomorrow, 75 the day after, you know. The carnage continues. It's not a war, it's carnage. Then we've got the hypocrisy of people who earn lots of goodies because of their exploitation of our resources or labour, this country's resources or people's labour, who then have the audacity to claim tax deductions for philanthropic work. Maybe if they'd paid their fair share of taxes, they wouldn't need to claim a tax deduction for philanthropic work. I mean, I could go on and on for the rest of the hour about hypocrisy, but you know what I'm talking about. The rhetoric reality gap widens every day. When you say you can't believe your eyes, you can't believe your eyes. Arrogance. Arrogance comes from the ability to wield power. And nothing is more arrogant than the buffoon in Washington and the murderer in Moscow. The fact that they, through their actions and through their gloating, are able to determine who lives and dies, who prospers and who doesn't, and nobody is in a position to actually call them out, highlights the arrogance which comes from unlimited power. And that's what we talk about on this program. Obviously, there are people who are arrogant, but the arrogance which comes from unlimited power is something to behold at the end of the first quarter of the 21st century. The arrogance of people who think they can bomb people into submission, who think they can, pauperise whole sections of the population. It's just extraordinary, that arrogance. And it gets worse day by day. Then ignorance. Well, ignorance comes in many forms. Look at the ignorance, and it still continues in many quarters, regarding the climate emergency. Since the mid-1970s, scientific paper after scientific paper, researcher after researcher, has been highlighting the fact that increased greenhouse emissions are due to human activity. Now, I can understand corporations who make their living from the fossil fuel industry trying to downplay these facts. Makes sense. It's like the tobacco industry 30 years ago did everything they could to downplay the fact that smoking causes cancers, emphysema, bronchitis, you name it, peripheral vascular disease, blindness. You can understand that. But the fact that that ignorance has played such a major part in the debates amongst the population, especially in this country, that protects these corporations from making the necessary changes is extraordinary. Then you have the ignorance regarding vaccinations. I mean, there are two things which have prolonged life in this country, around the world. One, sewage. Get rid of the shit from a community, process it. You decrease the amount of communicable diseases and you save the lives of tens of millions of people. You provide vaccination and scourges like smallpox, polio, measles, you name it, dissipate. We now have movements around the globe, including the land of the brave and the three, the US of A, which somehow believe, and it's about a belief system, somehow believe the advances in the millions, if not tens of millions of lives that have been saved through vaccination as some type of aberration. So ignorance is our day-to-day companion. And then greed. Well, what do you expect in a society which is based on one thing? Private profit from private investment. Private profit irrespective of the human, social and environmental costs. When you have an economic system which is dominated by a small number of people, corporations, hedge funds, who are hell-bent on creating profits for their major shareholders, obviously greed becomes an everyday human experience. You see, we are not islands. We are part of a community, whether we like it or not. People pay taxes. They receive social security benefits. They go shopping, even if it's online. They interact with other people. There are laws in place. Some good, many bad. So if you create an environment where greed is rewarded, and that's what we have, it's rewarded through our taxation system, it's rewarded through the legal system, what do you expect? So we are in the era of Haig. Hypocrisy. Ignorance. Greed. We're in that era. And that's an issue. It's not an issue just for you and me. It's an issue for everyone. Everyone. And that's the dilemma that we face every day. Now, it's very easy in such a situation to throw your hands up in horror and say, well, there's nothing we can do. That's life. That's the world at the end of the first quarter of the 21st century. Hypocrisy. Arrogance, ignorance, and greed are our everyday companions. But the fact is, they're not. And they don't have to be. Because we're not automata, we're not, you know, robots. See, the key to the future is engagement. Because I keep saying on this program, democracy isn't rule of the people, by the people, for the people. It's rule of the people, by the people, for the people, by an engaged public. Parliamentary democracy is nothing more than the first stage of a democratic revolution. Parliamentary democracy is a little bit like looking under at a microorganism under a microscope and comparing it to a fully formed human being. But the key is engagement, day-to-day engagement. If there's one thing the anarchist world this week encourages, people to become engaged. Engaged in the organisations in their community. Engage in the struggle to create new organisations which challenge authority. Because without an engaged public, nothing changes. Irrespective of the technological innovations. I mean, I can press a button and have a look at the atrocities that are happening in Gaza or the Ukraine or any other part of the world that's attached to the World Wide Web. I can do that. But is that engagement? No. That's voyeurism. And that's what we do. We watch. We wait. We watch. We wait. We watch. We say to ourselves, that's not good. I don't like that. Somebody should do something about that. Or you say, well, I don't like that. I'm going to do something. I'm going to do something after I finish my studies. I'm going to do something after I've established my career. I'm going to do something after I've had children. I'm going to do something after I pay my mortgage. I'm going to do something after I retire. And before you know it, you're dead and you missed your opportunity. So the key to political change is not just the initiation of ideas, but engaging in the struggle to make those ideas a reality. And being engaged in that struggle is not without its dangers. People lose their jobs. They lose their career prospects. Some find themselves in the courts, a few in jail currently in this country. That's the reality. But without that engagement, all you'll get is more of the same. And as I keep saying on this program, cynicism is the aphrodisiac of the ruling classes, those that rule us. Because if we're cynical, we believe you can't fight City Hall, you believe nothing will ever change, you believe that it's always going to be the same way, you know, the rich are going to exploit the poor, you know, well then nothing will change. So if there's one thing I hope you take from this program is the fact that ultimately change comes from individuals coming together and acting collectively to promote that change. Without those individuals and without that collective action, nothing changes.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
You listen to The Anarchist World this week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. That's 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. Now, as you get older, you see a lot of things. I assume that's what they call, you know, you've got experience as you get older. I mean, there are no respected elders in this type of culture. But you see things. And I'm interested in what happens to political parties, how they're created, and what happens to them if there's no engagement by the rank and file. And that's the key. Engagement by the rank and file. Now, we have three major parties in this country. and I'm excluding the Teals and One Nation from this, but three major parties that obtain about 90% of the vote, or 70%, about 85% of the vote. You've got the Liberal National Party, which is a coalition. You've got the Labor Party, and you've got the Greens, the Australian Greens, okay? Now, it's interesting how it was political movements which initially created these parties. As far as the Liberal Party was concerned, and to a lesser degree the National Party, it was about promoting free enterprise and personal freedoms. I'm not talking about the Liberal Party today, but that was the essence. That was the movement which led to the creation of the Liberal Party and its coalition with the National Party after World War II. Okay, then you've got the Labor Party, which has a long history. It has a history which spans almost over 140 years. It was created as a result of the failure of the strikes on the east coast of Australia, the maritime strikes in the 1870s, and more importantly, the Shearer's strike in the 1890s. The failure of these strikes and impending federation promoted Labor activists to create the Labor Party. And then in the 70s, we saw the creation of the Australian Greens as activists used direct action to bring the crisis affecting the environment to the population at large. So if you've got these three political parties that were formed who believed that by capturing parliamentary power, you could pass legislation and you could address many of the issues which face us, not just as individuals, but as communities and as a nation. But what we've seen over the last few decades is an interesting movement. And this movement has resulted because once a political party is formed, which represents theoretically certain interests, the movement which created that party dissipates. And what we see is minorities capturing the party apparatus. What's important about minorities capturing the party apparatus is that then they determine parliamentary direction, and even more importantly, they determine which people are pre-selected to stand in parliamentary elections, especially so-called safe parliamentary seats. Now, if we look at the Liberal National Party first, we have seen the Liberal National Party being taken over by extreme right-wing movements, some religious base, some based on economic philosophies, you know, which promote deregulation and globalisation and corporatisation, divestiture of public assets. And we have seen where that has led the Liberal National Party. The more moderate elements have been squeezed out of the party. We've seen the emergence of the Teals in safe Liberal seats. These are candidates who are socially progressive but economically conservative. So we've seen the Liberal Party, especially the Liberal Party, find itself in a situation where its very existence has become an issue because the party was captured by elements which really had nothing in common with the movements which created the party in the first place. Then if we look at the Labor Party, it's been through a number of transformations. In the last 20 to 30 years, that transformation has resulted in a party where the structure of the party, the factions involved in the party, the way people are pre-selected, who's pre-selected, what policies are promoted, have become grossly diluted. And it's interesting to note that its base, the traditional working class, which, you know, we can debate its composition, has fallen away. And it's now basically relying on different elements in society for it to be re-elected as the government. So that movement for change, which was part and parcel of over 50 years ago, which led to the election of the Labor, the Whitlam-led Labor government, which was a reformist government because of the movement which was created around the party at that particular point in time, which wanted change, which wanted reform, has dissipated. And there is no engagement or minimal engagement in the branch structure of this party. Now, unfortunately, the Australian Greens now face the same problem. The failure of the Australian Greens to hold on to its, some of its seats, I think they've been reduced to one in the House of Representatives, one Brisbane seat, to a significant degree is due to the fact that the very movement which created the need for a Greens party has now been usurped by interests who are more keen on promoting identity politics within the party structure than anything else. And over the last few years, we've seen the expulsion of numerous members of the Australian Greens because they don't toe a particular position on a particular identity politics. So in many ways, this is what happens when we do not become engaged, when we allow the political groups, the social groups, the cultural groups that we belong to become the property of a minority which is only interested in maintaining its own power, not initiating reform or change in society. So if you are a member of these parties, you know, and they need 1,500 members to be registered as a political party, it's time, and you still believe in the movement, it's time that maybe you should look at, one, your engagement in them, and two, if that engagement is no longer welcome, that you move away into more actions which have got more possibilities of succeeding. Let's move on. You listen to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. You realise, you know, you see, broadcast is a little bit boring. I'll tell you why it's boring, because it's about repetition. Because if you look at history, and I love looking at history, you find that nothing really has changed. I mean, we've got cars and we've got aeroplanes and we've got electric cars and we've got blenders and we've got this and we've got that and we've got wonderful little things and we can binge on pay TV, you can be an internet warrior, all these wonderful things. But the fact is that the human relationships which are part and parcel of everyday life are still there. It's the same. It's the same relationships. It's the same struggle that occurred in ancient Greece or that occurred in, you know, thousands of years ago in some Paleolithic clan. It's that same struggle. It hasn't changed. The clothes have changed. The social attitudes have changed. The culture has changed. But that struggle between those who acquire wealth and use that wealth to mould society in such a way as to increase their wealth and increase their control hasn't changed. And the fact that we still have tyrants and dictators, many of them we elect ourselves through a parliamentary system, hasn't changed. The concepts of who controls what, who has what, is still the fundamental aspect of human existence, whether it's in a household, a family, a clan, a suburb, a city, a country, the planet Earth. It's the same struggle everywhere, irrespective of the clothes you wear, the language you speak, your sexuality, you know, your sex, I should say your gender, and the list goes on and on. So if you are doing a broadcast like this, and hopefully many of you are doing podcasts these days, the fact is that, you know, repetition is important because history is about repetition. Now, obviously, different periods, different aspects of history are important, but ultimately, who benefits? Who benefits from war? Who benefits from that ongoing struggle between employer and employee? Who benefits when we elect certain people into positions of authority if we live in a parliamentary democracy? And the fact is, it seems that the same minuscule group benefits at the expense of the majority. Let's move on. Tell them they're dreaming. Remember the old Kerrigans in the castle? The good thing about the castle was is the impossible happened. And obviously we know things don't happen like that. And I'll talk about the Torres Strait Islanders' failed federal court case in a few minutes. But tell them they're dreaming. And it's interesting, isn't it? The buffoon in Washington, duly elected by the American people, who are now experiencing the implementation of the buffoons and his followers' policies. Fascinating. This is the crew that allowed a million Americans to die of COVID when many could have been saved if they took a few precautions, but that's a different story. So here we have the buffoon, you know. When you talk about hypocrisy, the buffoon, here we have, saying to Australians, look, boys and girls in Australia, you little people, because obviously we're little people as far as they're concerned, and I'm not going to talk about those boring tariffs. I'm going to talk about something even more boring, the pharmaceutical benefits scheme in this country. Now, almost every listener to the Anarchist World this week benefits from the pharmaceutical benefits scheme. This is a scheme which costs the Commonwealth government, which is you and me, about $19 billion a year. And what the Commonwealth pharmaceutical benefits scheme is, it subsidises over 900 important medicines in this country. See, the pharmaceutical benefits scheme is a problem. It's a great thing for Australians because for a limited amount of money, you can actually access necessary medications. For example, if you acquire COVID-19, you're over a certain age, you've got certain issues, you can get a bottle of antivirals, 40 tablets. If you're on a pension, it's about $6 to $7. If you're not, it's around $35. But the government pays $1,016 per bottle to a pharmaceutical company. And that's cheap, believe it or not. But the fact is that what the pharmaceutical benefit scheme does, it allows the Australian government to bargain with pharmaceutical corporations for the best price. It's a little bit like going to a shop. Instead of buying one toilet roll, you buy 600 toilet rolls. You can get a discount. So these pharmaceutical corporations, and many have a monopoly because they theoretically created that medication, have to take a cut in order to supply the Australian government these necessary medications which go on the pharmaceutical benefit scheme. Now, these pharmaceutical giants, some of the richest corporations on the face of planet Earth, are pissed off with Australia's pharmaceutical benefit scheme. They say it's socialism. It's evil. And they want to destroy the Australian pharmaceutical benefit scheme. So the buffoon, listening to these people who, you know, bankroll him, is saying, well, why don't we introduce tariffs on Australian pharmaceutical exports unless they open up the market to these pharmaceutical corporations in the USA who've got a monopoly in the production of these drugs and pay them the maximum amount. Extraordinary, isn't it? Line in the sand. Then we had the ridiculous situation 24 hours ago when Mr. Albanese went to visit China to shore up, investment possibilities and trade possibilities, that some mug from the USA, you know, high-tiered mug, says, well, Australia, what are you going to do if we have a fight with the Chinese over Taiwan? What are you going to do? Are you going to be on our side? Are those submarines we're going to, you know, sell you for a maximum price? Are you going to push the buttons on them? Come on. It's about time we drew a line as a people, as a nation, in the sand and told the USA to piss off. I said last week, boycott everything. You can, as an individual, you can do something. But come on. Talk about arrogance and ignorance and hypocrisy and greed. I mean, the way they're acting highlights all of this. But ultimately, the losers won't be us if we stand up to these mugs, because there's a big world out there, and that's what the Labor government did by going to China, by saying there is a big world out there and we need to spread our wings and not put our eggs all in one basket. There's a big world out there. And ultimately, the greatest losers will be the people of the United States of America. And especially those without power, those without resources, those who live a hand-to-mouth existence. They will be the biggest losers, and they will continue to be the biggest losers while they think that the policies of making America great again will somehow make them great. So, once again, you do have options. See, this is the thing is, you know, we're told there is no other way. No other way. You've got to do this and you've got to do that. And if you don't do this, this will happen. And so the earth will come down and, you know, it's not like that. There are always other ways. There are always other ways. There's always other ways that human beings interact and survive. And that's the story of humanity. It's about survival. And it's not about survival of the fittest, as we all told it's about. It's not a survival of the strongest or the biggest. The communities that survive are those that are involved in collective action, that look after themselves, that look after the people around them. It's that collectivism that has given the human race that advantage over most of the other species on planet Earth. We have that capacity. And the trouble is we seem to have forgotten that capacity. We seem to have forgotten. You listen to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. Now, a few little boring things I want to talk about. I know. things can be boring. Medicare isn't there to guarantee corporate profitability. You like that? Medicare isn't there to guarantee corporate profitability. Now, this year is the 50th anniversary of the dismissal of the Whitlam-led Labor government, and on the 11th of November, we'll be holding some type of event on the steps of the Victorian Parliament House here in Melbourne to remember that period. But one of the greatest innovations was the introduction of a universal healthcare system, Medicare. In those days, it was called Medibank. But the problem is, over the last 50 years, we've seen, and I've been a doctor, this is my 50th year as a doctor, so I was there at the beginning of the introduction of Medicare, or Medibank as it was called in those days. What we've seen is the dilution of the idea that we should have a universal healthcare system. And unfortunately, private medicine in this country is no longer private medicine. And that's the problem. As we saw the growth of the aged care sector and the early childhood development sector once it became privatised, and NDIS, as its services became privatised, we've seen the increasing entry of corporations into the provision of private healthcare. And this has resulted in a decrease in the amount of services that are bulk bill. We now have the ridiculous situation where four corporations control 50% of the radiological examinations in the private sector. And you've got to remember, many of these private corporations have contracts with public hospitals to provide these services. So we're creating a system which to a large degree supports the corporatisation of healthcare. We see this in the private medical facilities, where over 50% of so-called general practices are now controlled by a handful of corporations. And many of these doctors find themselves in a salaried position. Not that there's anything wrong with being in a salaried position. At the same time, we are seeing the private healthcare sector. And I can hear people saying, why are you talking about the private healthcare sector, Jay? What's it got to do with me? Well, if you earn above a certain amount, you're basically forced to take out private health insurance. And let's not forget that every year that over $6 billion of taxpayers' money goes to fund the private health insurance industry. Because if you do have private health insurance, you'll notice that there is a component which is paid for by the Commonwealth government, which is me and you for our taxation, right? But what we're seeing is a dramatic shift in the role that these private health insurance conglomerates are now moving. And we're seeing the introduction of managed healthcare in the private health sector. What that means is the private health corporation, not only takes your payment, and it can be up to $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 a year, depending on the type of private health insurance you have, but at the same time, they provide the services. They limit your freedom of choice. They limit the type of investigations and surgical procedures and medical procedures you can undergo. This is what managed care is. It means they put their profitability before your health. Now, obviously, 50% of Australians do not have private health insurance. Another of those that are privately insured, at least 50% wouldn't take out private insurance unless they had to under the current taxation system. So the fact is we are seeing dramatic changes in the way healthcare is provided, the way it's financed, the way it's managed, and that has profound implications as far as outcomes are concerned, especially in a population that's growing older, which has many, many comorbidities. Because as you get older, you have more comorbidities. What that means is you may have diabetes, you may have blood pressure, you may have this, you may have that. You may have five or six medical issues by the time you're 70. And that means that you need access to healthcare. And if you can't get that access through the public sector, and it's increasingly difficult to get that access through the public sector unless you've got an extreme emergency, and you find that you're exploited in the private health sector, if you find yourself in that sector, then there's an issue. Now, I'm a great believer, believe it or not, in stock market principles. You know, if you invest big time in a particular organisation, a particular business, you expect a seat on the board. Because the board of that corporation makes decisions about how that corporation functions and how it acts. Now, we have this ridiculous situation in Australia where, as taxpayers, we pour money into the private sector, whether it's renewable energy, the fossil fuel industry, whether it's private medical care, whether it's mineral extraction, you name it. But the government never demands a seat on the board. How ridiculous. How totally ridiculous. Giving taxpayers' money to private corporations to provide services which governments should provide, but not demand a seat on the board to determine policy. There should be somebody in every bank, because banks function because of the fact they've got a government license. They're allowed to do certain things. So why isn't there a public person on the board? I spoke about private health insurance companies. $6 billion goes into the private health insurance industry of taxpayers' money. Where's the seats on the board? So to give taxpayers' money to private organisations to provide services which should be provided by the state is ludicrous. But to allow them to take that money without any real oversight by having members of that organisation on the board is totally ludicrous. Well, you've been listening to The Anarchist World this week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network in Sydney. This program has been coming to you from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. If you find yourself in Melbourne on the 16th of July, that's Wednesday the 16th of July, I'm doing a presentation tonight at the Footscray Hotel at 48 Hopkins Street, Footscray, on the Industrial Workers of the World. What has that organisation got to do with us in 20, 25, 100 years later? You'd be surprised. So come along tonight. If you can't come along, the presentation will be on a YouTube channel. The YouTube channel is josephtoscano.net. Other YouTube channels, Public Interest Before Corporate Interest. You can join online. Go to pibci.net. There are many Anarchist World This Week's podcasts, courtesy of Community Radio 3CR. If you go to 3cr.org.au, put Anarchist World This Week, bingo, you'll be able to access it. There are many other programs here in Community Radio 3CR. that you may want to access. So come and have a look at the page. Why not? Once again, if you want to leave messages, 0439 395 489, 0439 395 489. You've been listening to this program courtesy of the Community Radio Network across Australia, north and south, east and west, in every state of Australia. Please listen into the Anarchist World this week, next week. If you're interested, if you're not, become engaged in something. Because apathy, as I keep saying, is the aphrodisiac of those who make the decisions for us. Listen in next week to the Anarchist World this week on your local community radio station, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. Well, I think that's almost the end of the program. So hopefully you'll be here next week. I'll be here next week. Tell your friends about the Anarchist World this week. Tell them about the podcast, 3cr.org.au, Anarchist World this week.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.